You see, the flowers are a metaphor for the child. Neither can grow in bad soil. Do you get it? Do you get the obvious metaphor? It's the 60s. Do we understand metaphors yet? Let's make it a little more. The Chalk Garden was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Maybe that's a bad cold open because no one has or ever will watch this movie. So I'm just I'm responding to something that they would have to listen to the episode we're about to do to even understand the reference making.
But Robin has a theory about who would be watching this.
What's my theory?
Is that it would be Good Morning, Miss Bliss super fans.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes.
They're out there.
Yep, absolutely. And actually, a friend of the pod, Joseph Finn, said, oh, I heard of this movie because I read Haley Mills' autobiography.
Which is fairly recent.
Oh, okay, right? There you go.
I mean, like, last 10 years. Yeah. But it's, yeah. Hey, I'm Sean. Here is the two Clockwork Musicians. I don't know. It's Camila Adams.
Can I offer you red or white?
And Robin Hitchcock.
Ding, 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 ding.
Look at that. We all spontaneously refer to our own choices. It worked out. Yeah, we did Little Treat Film Festival 2 last time. The Third Man, 86. The Abominable Dr. Fibes, 72 and 2/3. The Perfect Host, 65 and 2/3. And yes, The Third Man is now 18th overall.
Wow.
So cracked the top 20, which is pretty good the number of things that we've done. Tied. With previous Little Treat, The Five Heartbeats.
Nice.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Thin Man wins on Robin's 97 for The Thin Man, the highest score you've ever given.
Yep.
Which begs the question, do you know a 100?
I don't think there is a 100.
For you?
I really don't think there's a 100.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Because I mean, like,
I find something to be bummed about in every single movie. Sorry.
I think I've gone on record, the only two that I'm aware of are Mulholland Drive and E.T.
Yeah, you have.
And as much as, like, Jaws is the movie I watch most, I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's a 99.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there are hundreds.
I think mine is Lars and the Real Girl.
You've mentioned that before, which, like, I watched that movie because you said that. It's also, it was not nominated for a screenplay Oscar, so I would eventually watch it. But it went up the ratings because of that. And I really liked it, but I was like, 100?
But Casablanca,
you're the 99.
You're the Casablanca girl. You gotta
99. Listen, there's like that part where it's just like, let's stop and have a little song that's not Sam.
Well, I also think, like, what would 100 mean to you? Like, what would it take to make it 100 for me? Like, the reason why Lara's in The Real Girl, I think it's a great story. It was phenomenal acting, and it also the emotional depth that it reached for me. So it's not like I'm saying it's a perfect movie, but
I think I'm looking for a perfect movie.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm.
Yeah. I'm like, it's a 100 out of 100.
Well,
there's a lot of movies I'll call a 10 out of 10.
Right.
Right.
But, like, you also know how hard it is for me to give something 5 stars on Letterboxd.
No, you don't do it too often.
Yeah.
It's, I look forward to, I feel like I'll cry a little bit the day that Robin finds her 100.
Yeah.
It will be a national holiday. Mm-hmm. Let's have a proclamation day. Robin's 100 day.
But,
and it's going to be something on this list from the 60s no one's ever heard of.
Will it be the Chalk Garden?
No.
No. But not... It's,
I enjoyed this a lot.
I kind of enjoyed this.
Camila?
Sort of. I did enjoy it, but it just... That fucking score is too much.
It really is... omnipresent.
It's psycho for kids.
Like, I'm not going to, like, the scene where she's like, oh, they're painting on the rocks, and she's like, I'm not going to compliment your painting, and they're like, dot, 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 like, relax, it's not that serious.
I mean, everything in this movie is melodrama.
Yeah.
And it is so heightened and so silly that you have to get on this movie's level in order to watch it.
Well, I was, like, kind of going through, like, okay, this was a play.
It's very much a play.
Yes, and that I probably would have enjoyed it more as a play.
Absolutely.
And I also, watching all this melodrama made me beg the question, like, at what point did we learn to tone down the acting? And like, was it like the further away we got from stage acting and then and silent films? Like, and who made the decision to be like, yo, we don't need to go this big?
Because Stanislavski.
Okay.
Right? I am talking about a subject I don't actually know. You studied theater.
In theory. I mean, it was a long time ago and my grades weren't that good. But yeah, there was a big shift towards natural reactions in the beginning of the what era are we talking about? The 50s, 60s?
Mid-century.
The mid-century, you know, even Marilyn Monroe is training to try to get more natural.
Right? So, like, I took a theater class in high school. That's the only theater class I've ever taken. Mm. And we watched the film A Streetcar Named Desire, and I wrote a paper about the contrast between Vivian Leigh and Marlon Brando's acting, and to a lesser extent, Carl Malden's acting. And I think that was, if I could go back to 2000 and get that paper for you, Camila, I bet I would have some really cogent 16-year-old arguments.
But there's so much, especially when they're yelling at each other on the beach, which I love to hate that scene.
Me too. Love it. I love it. Just love it.
I just love it, but it's also,
I would have hugged a post.
Right.
There are so many things that Haley Mills yells in this movie that if you deadpanned them, it would be Michael Scott.
Do you have examples?
I'd rather be dead in hell. God made tears to be cried. That was Deborah Carr. It's so cheesy, and yet I'm kind of on board the whole way.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, if you get on board with this, it is just delightful, but it is a steep climb to get there.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked the manservant. What was his
name? Maitland?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who, do we all know that is John Mills' father of Haley Mills?
That's Haley Mills'
dad. I learned that yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I had no idea she was even a Nepo baby.
I had me either. It's like, it's something about him that everything he says feels like a double entendre. I don't remember I don't remember what it was, but he said something, the way he like side looked at Mrs. Madrigal. Is that the family Madrigal?
I literally had a moment of, should I make my recap the family Madrigal? And I was like, too much effort for a podcast four people are going to listen to.
But let's get to that recap, because if you are listening, thank you. And also, you definitely don't know anything about the 1964 melodrama, The Chalk Garden.
It has like 300 reviews on Letterboxd.
Yeah, this is way down there.
More than I thought it would.
Yep. Yeah.
Here's Robin to tell you what happens in this film.
Ready?
Cheaters on. And I'm ready.
Go.
Miss Madrigal is hired as governess for an incorrigible teen, Laurel, who lives with her grandmother in a country estate with a garden of metaphors that won't grow plants because there's too much chalk in the soil. Madrigal recognizes herself in Laurel and diagnoses her with abandonment issues because her mom left and her dad drank himself to death. Maitland, the butler, tries to get to know Madrigal better, but she won't open up. She can't hide her concerned reaction when she sees a framed picture of a family friend who is a judge. Poking around in Madrigal's stuff, Laurel finds a case monogram, CDW. Laurel's mother is pregnant again and wants Laurel to return to live with her, but Grand Lou objects and invites the judge over to discuss custody. A shaken Madrigal brings up an old case of the judge's in which she sentenced a teen girl to death for murdering her stepsister. And that teen was named Constance Doris Wakeland. The judge eventually recognizes Madrigal as Wakeland. She uses the revelation to convince everyone Laurel is a ticking time bomb who needs to get out of the chalk garden and into quality topsoil with her mother. Grand Lou keeps Madrigal on as a companion and they make plans to revive the garden.
Good job.
Woo!
5 seconds to spare.
And there's a lot to talk about. There's a surprisingly dense plot.
It is. When we get to the conclusion, because the trailer...
Meet the personalities in this strange and suspenseful drama. Miss Madrigal. Who was she? Where did she come from? Why did she pace her room night after night? Laurel, 16 and outrageous.
I steal things. I cheat at cards. I make up dreadful lies about people and then I blackmail them.
Is that all?
Yet Laurel wanted something. Was it warmth, affection, love? Could Miss Madrigal give it to her? Could Maitland, the servant who acted like a master?
And what else is on the menu this morning, boss? Mathematics, personality development, sex education?
No.
Well, I've got to learn sometime. I'll never get the hang of it. Don't you come near me. And don't you get the wrong impression about what I just did.
Laurel.
I'd have put my arms around a post or a rock just then.
Laurel.
I don't trust you any more than I trust my own mother.
Laurel.
A liar. A girl who lied. And when she told the truth, it didn't save her.
But I didn't mean it. I never meant it to go so far.
The trailer kind of hangs on, and the most shocking twist you could ever, and I'm like...
Oh, it's really not super shocking.
I figured.
Yeah. Right.
Like, very early on, I was like, this loses points if nobody murdered anybody. Like, someone here definitely murdered. And then I was right.
You can't set a movie at a country estate and not have a murder. It's like in the cinema bylaws.
Mm-hmm. Or you have the crashing moors as your backdrop.
Exactly. Somebody is either dead or has died.
Right.
So it's not like shocking. It's just... And as much as I like watching this unfold, very little of it is like motivated by anything.
No, but
it's, I don't get the impression that Grand Lou is doing anything particularly wrong in her raising.
Same.
I don't get the impression that going back to the mother would benefit her in any meaningful way.
Same.
I
disagree.
Really?
I think the metaphor, right? Grand Lou's problem is she is letting this little brat do whatever the fuck she wants to.
Mm.
Grand Lou is only going to say yes and indulge, and it's just a life of comfort.
Okay, I didn't really get that.
That's not what the girl needs.
Right.
She needs somebody to, I'm sorry, smack her.
But
righteous child slapping in this movie. When it happens, it's like, yeah, you had to. Yes, there was no other choice.
Corporal punishment is wrong. Okay, I don't have kids. Leave me alone.
Melodramas are a special case.
Did I feel that slap in my heart, and it like put a little Band-Aid on it.
Yeah, like, I mean, at the beginning of this, that, when we start off, when we meet Laurel, it's like I was instantly triggered because I'm like in the middle of summer vacation with no camp or childcare.
I should mention that the letterbox list is movies that make me not want kids. It's mostly horror movies.
I was gonna say
this counts.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, part of what I liked about this though is I've never seen Haley Mills do this. Right? I know her as Pollyanna.
Yeah.
Which this is like Annie Paula. This is the opposite of Pollyanna.
Auntie Polly.
Auntie Polly. That's exactly what it is. Thank you. We got there.
And she's so into it. Like, she mentions sex, and you can tell she's really happy about it.
You know, she's an 18-year-old who was a child star.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Whoa. So she's 18 at this point?
Yeah.
No wonder she looks so damn grown. Why were they trying to pull her off as 12?
I thought she was 16.
Somebody called her 12.
Oh, my God.
Well,
okay.
No.
Yes. In my brain, she was definitely a older teen.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she is. Wait,
what the hell's her name? How old is the character?
AI says 16. Wikipedia says 15. TCM, there's a real source, says 16.
Okay.
All right. I wrote down 12 because somebody said something about a 12-year-old, but okay.
I'm glad that you were wrong because that would have been silly.
That would have really just kind of wrecked though. Okay, so that adds a couple more points then.
Good. Okay.
She's 16 and she loves silly hats. She starts.
I love that hat with the glasses and eyebrows.
No, because she starts in a kind of silly hat. Mm. And I wrote down, oh, she found the world's silliest hat.
No.
And then wrote down, oh, she found a dumber hat.
Yes.
Just part of the charms of the Chart Garden, which was released May 21st, 1964, went to number one on June 3rd. Just the seventh number one movie of that year. Most of the early part of 1964 was flip-flopping between Tom Jones and previous episode subject, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Interesting.
I'm not sure how relevant this is. Variety noted that a large part of the film's success was setting the Memorial Day weekend record at Radio City Music Hall. So...
Cool.
It somehow over Memorial Day weekend that year, it grossed $180,000 on that one screen. That's like having $2 million on one screen.
Today. Right.
Wow. So New York was crazy for the Chalk Garden on Memorial Day 64. It earned about $3.2 million overall. Not close to the top 10 for that year. Profitable. Well received. Expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
Edith Evans was nominated.
More nominations, at least. Edith Evans.
Grand Lou.
The grandma? Okay.
Yes.
Mrs. St. Mom, which has far too many letters in it.
Yes.
They're saying mom, and there's seven letters in that name. Nominated for Best Supporting Actress, lost to...
Lila Kudrova?
Correct.
Yes.
What's Zorba the Greek?
I've never seen it. It was nominated for Best Picture.
Is it like... Old timey Greek? Is it like Odyssey Greek? Or is it just a Greek guy named Zorba?
I don't know. I do know Anthony Quinn is in it. Mm.
Also nominated for 4 BAFTAs. Both Evans and Deborah Carr were nominated for Best British Actress. They lost to Audrey Hepburn in Charade. It also was nominated for Best Drama at the Golden Globes. It lost to Beckett.
Also never seen Beckett.
Don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Bend it.
Yes, that one. It was way ahead of its time. Based on a play of the same name by Enid Bagnold, enormous critical hit both on Broadway and especially on the West End. Critics ate this up. As you said, it's very theatrical.
Yeah.
Even more than it's filmic. Edith Evans and Felix Aylmer, who played the judge, both were in the West End production.
Oh, cool.
Reprised the roles. In fact, both Grand Lou's, the Broadway Grand Lou, and Edith Evans fought over the part, and Edith Evans won. The first name we see is the producer, Ross Hunter, who did Pillow Talk, Imitation of Life, Flower Drum Song, All That Heaven Allows, a lot of melodramas.
I thought it had Imitation of Life vibes.
Mm-hmm. Much later, he did Airport, one of Robin's faves.
That's a slight exaggeration, although watch Airport, it fucks.
That's what you say every time. He just loved the play. He got it made through force of will. He also, like, prettied it up over the theatrical version. And here's Ron Perlman to tell you more.
Welcome to TCM. I'm Ron Perlman. Up next is a film set in England, but covered with a Hollywood sheen. From Universal in 1964, it's The Chalk Garden. The Hollywood sheen comes courtesy of the film's producer, Ross Hunter, the man behind such lush, slick movies as Imitation of Life and Pillow Talk. Our film is based on a stage play by Enid Bagnold, which took place on a shabby English estate. But Ross Hunter believed that people went to see movies to see pretty things, so the surroundings were appropriately spiffed up.
It's interesting. I don't know what I would prefer. I'm not...
What, a dirty...
Yeah, I feel like I liked it the way it was.
I mean, it didn't... It had real no effect on me. You know, like, okay. it wasn't shocking to see this, like, really raggedy garden, but also it's like, I got the point. It's like, okay, yeah. she can't grow shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that maybe the metaphor is a little more powerful to me if appearances are, for the most part, great at this wasp estate. Mm. Mm-hmm. And then, but the underbelly is this kid's a ticking time bomb.
Right.
Right. The director, meanwhile, Ronald Neame, who was active from the early 40s until the late 80s, had a very long career, initially as a screenwriter, 2-time Oscar nominee for Best Adapted Screenplay for Great Expectations and Oliver Twist. Before he moved to directing, he directed a lot. His best years were actually ahead of him. He did The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. He did Scrooge, not Scrooged, but Scrooge with Albert Finney. He did The Poseidon Adventure. You know, kind of just a guy, but did it for a very long time. Haley Mills, I started... going down the Haley Mills rabbit hole because she is fascinating.
Yeah.
I would read that memoir. It feels like she's doing, I'm moving on from Disney and being bad.
That's what it felt like to me, and I loved it. But that's not what was happening?
She just hadn't actually moved on from Disney yet. They just let her out from time to time.
I see. Okay.
Parent Trap is in 61. In Search of the Castaways is in 62. Summer Magic is in 63. She had a Disney movie this year. It was called The Moon Spinners. And was supposed to be a little more suspense. But That Darn Cat is a year after this.
Oh, interesting. So
she's very much still doing that stuff, but trying to stretch. And yeah, it works.
I watched Pollyanna and the original Parent Trap so much as a child. And I also watched Good Morning, Miss Bliss. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I am in a very weird elder millennial microgeneration of Haley Mills superfan.
But we established none of us had seen this movie.
I had never seen this. Okay. And honestly, even though it's in my Oscar spreadsheet, I had never, like, that did not ring bells. Usually when you name something that had a major Oscar nomination, I'm like, I've seen that in a spreadsheet before, but not this time.
Which we glossed over it, but she's good. Oscar nomination? Is that just like... Sometimes a charming old British lady gets the fifth one.
She got 3 Oscar nominations in 3 years. Mm. I think she was having a moment with the Academy. I think it was also a, she's a legend. I don't really know. I really liked her one, Life Without a Room to One's Own is a barbarity.
Yeah.
There are good lines in this.
Yes.
Why do I say anything? For effect.
Right, yeah.
Very modern for 1964.
I think if we could jump ahead to the bingo card, I think we should take unrealistic dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not the typical unrealistic dialogue. It's just heightened. People are talking more poetically than people actually talk.
Right, even in 1964 Britain.
Right, even fancy rich people don't really talk like this. And yet, it's entertaining to watch them talk like this.
Oh, absolutely.
How about unnecessary romance subplot? Because I did not care about the little spark between Maitland and...
I also was arguing that. Yep.
What'd you say?
The little spark between unnecessary... Oh, yeah.
Maitland and Madrigal?
Yeah.
I'm one away, but I don't think anyone enhanced an image in this film.
Unfortunately, so. No.
All these X-Files I'm watching, it's every other episode, but...
Other argument I would make is untouched meal. When the judge comes over, they touch their glasses of wine, but the food, not... handled.
Wow.
Oh, and she refuses to eat when she's after she's discovered the briefcase.
You are right.
Yeah.
Wow, this one's really knocking it out the park here.
Yeah. Well, I had one more fact. What wasn't? Oh, Haley Mills is replacing Sandra Dee.
Oh.
Oh, interesting.
And Joanne Woodward was the original lead.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine, like, if this, because for what's her name, Madrigal, to say that. I don't know why I'm saying it with a spectacle.
You have to. It is such a bizarre name for this very proper British lady.
Right.
You had a young child in the post-Encanto era. You will never say that name exactly. Any other way again.
True story. So the behaviors of Laurel, it just doesn't seem that striking. Like, fuck yeah, she's going to turn into a murderer. Like, it doesn't seem. Like, so could you imagine, like, if it was made today? Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure it was because of the time period that it was made. You know, like, there's only so much they can do with a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if it was made today, like, the kind of antics that Laurel would have to be pulling on screen for them to be like, oh, yeah, this bitch is...
She'd have to be like Kevin in Home Alone.
Right, exactly. or basically, no, or Kevin, and we need to talk about Kevin.
She made AI posters for a teen takeover of the park. 7,000 kids showed up. The National Guard was called in. I think the pyromania is a fairly healthy outlet for her. Like, every day she burns some sticks and screams. Great.
Right. I want to do that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that and about that therapy.
Also, how much is Deborah Carr just projecting?
Yeah.
Right? Is it like, well, I was a brat and I murdered someone, right. So all brats murder.
It's like, you know what? Maybe it's time. Were you really ready to be let out? Because I feel like you're doing a lot.
I was very, when it was like, when did you come out of jail? She's like, I came here straight from jail. I was like really? Like, I knew there was the, like, clue that she still had tags on all her clothes. But,
oh,
like, yeah, it was in the very beginning. That was, like, the first, like, something isn't right with this lady. And she does not seem like somebody who just got out of jail. She seems way too, like, that must have been a very prim jail.
So she definitely didn't murder anybody, right?
What, I thought she definitely did.
I thought she did.
They kind of talk around it. I mean, the last thing is her telling Grand Lou, I'll never tell you whether or not I did it.
Right.
Basically.
And earlier on, she was like, I was a girl who lied and lied and lied. And when I told the truth, it didn't save me.
Oh.
So I interpret that to being like, no, I went to court and told them what happened, that I didn't murder anybody, but they didn't believe me because I had done all the previous lying.
But it's wild to me that grandma would ask her point blank if she did it, and then she gets all evasive, like, you know, if, you know, all these people and these couldn't decide, why do you think I'm going to tell you now? And then,
I think she murdered her, but had her reasons, and that was the truth.
Mm.
The truth was, I murdered her, but you don't understand. I murdered her for blah, blah, blah.
And it's wild for the grandmother to be like, I'm going to find out before I die, if she thinks that she did it, so... Which brings us to the sequel, The Chalk Outline Garden.
Amazing.
She was looking like she's like, okay, you can try if you want to, see what happens.
Yeah. I definitely, like, flashed to the, you know, modern Apple TV miniseries adaptation of this.
Oh, yeah.
Where they show you everything. Where there's like flashbacks for all of this. And I was like, I'm so glad I'm not watching any fucking flashbacks about this dead stepsister.
Because you know what they would do? There would be lots of flashbacks, and some of them would be fantasy.
Yes.
Like you would get a flashback of Laurel's father shooting himself, and not until two episodes later would it be like, that didn't happen.
And then the final episode would be the flashback of what actually happened.
Yeah.
We'd be getting like three different versions. And what's her name? Grace something? She would play Laurel. What is her name? Maggie? No. It's a little girl. She looks like the girl that...
McKenna Grace.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. She would be Laurel.
I need to talk about the scene with the baby doll.
Talk about the scene with the baby doll.
I didn't cry.
What, was it close?
But my face scrunched up when she went and picked up the cracked head baby doll.
Yeah.
I was like, there's just so much pain in you. Aww. And I think I was crying more for the baby doll than for her. Mm. But like, there's some... Haley Mills fucking nailed it in that one. Yeah. Like, it's really hard to do the like... I'm revealing this character's true soul in a way that doesn't undercut what I'm doing the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
She's really good in this.
I agree.
Which is why she had so much work. Back of it, I was wondering, like, again, so we still don't know, like, for sure what Madrigal did. But we also, I don't know if we got the real story as to why she doesn't. Like, why she hates her mom so much? Because she claims that her dad, like, you know, she lied and said that her dad shot himself in front of her because her mom was whoring around. The grandma was like, no. He just... So, I mean.
She did leave.
Okay, so mom left did.
Her. Okay. She left her daughter and her husband.
Okay, all right.
So, like, personally.
Yeah, I get
I'm
it.
Like, yeah, you can hate her forever.
Right, yeah.
Hate her forever.
Oh, absolutely. Like, valid.
Yeah.
But so, and so if that's the case, then I didn't really see anything that was saying that living with grandma was so bad. Like, it didn't fit. Yes, it seemed like, you know, grandma was like, you know, just kind of catering to her a little bit more than she should. There wasn't a clear set of structure. I'm also not, was this summertime? Why wasn't she in school?
Right. Well, she has a governess instead of going to school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, boss.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, we don't see her mom really being like, yes, I've changed. Or
I agree. When I was writing my recap and I was like the topsoil of her mother, I'm like, we have no evidence that she'll actually be good with her mom.
Right.
But I don't just think it's that Grand Lou is too permissive. It's not just that. I think that the proper withheld waspiness of that environment is no good for anyone. And I might be projecting here, but I genuinely think that that was like what the message behind the chalk garden metaphor was. Mm. That like there's just no love here that can forge a fully emotionally developed person.
Yeah, I mean, and also, and grandma is like 1 foot in the grave, the other on a banana peel. So
yeah,
like poor kid is gonna go through some shit with like within 5 years.
Yeah,
what did she think she was gonna lawsuit? Like, I get to keep this child from her legal guardian
because she abandoned
money,
her.
I guess she just figured she's got the money to do it.
Well, God knows what custody law was in the UK.
Right.
And whenever this is set, I don't even know. I assumed it was set in the present. But in the US, the prevailing thing is the best interest of the child. Mm-hmm. So you just say it's in the best interest of the child to live in the chalk garden.
Right.
It's so chalky.
Because her mother has, you know, a history of abandonment.
Exactly.
I do love that a big part of this plot hangs on Laurel being the world's first true crime girly.
Yes.
Obsessive, like, tell me about the murderer.
Right.
What was his face like? What did it feel like when you said he was going to die? This movie's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else? I have, may we all be so overloaded with sex that it sparkles.
That's going to be my Christmas card.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to do now? I'm going to continue to explore the astonishment of living.
Nice. I never shake hands. It's so animal.
Love that.
Oh, God. We could just keep quoting it.
I know.
Mean, it's got some great lines. And there was something, and I forgot to write it down, but it struck me like when Madrigal was talking to the judge and he said something to her. It was almost like, you know what? If you do this for me, I'm going to keep a secret.
Like, yeah. That judge character does a lot with a very small amount of screen time.
And it's fucked up that she told on herself. Yes. She rolls in there and is like, she's when like, did you know? He's like, not until you just said
something. I just found out, lady.
Not until this moment.
When did you know I was a murderer? I didn't. Then I'm not.
I was just hypothetically
keeping you on your toes
murderer
anyway.
Murderer of time. You didn't let me finish. Mm-hmm. A murderer of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not telling anyone, run out and watch this.
No.
But like seeing the TCM intro, especially like if you turned on TCM and this was on that night.
You don't need to change the channel.
No. Yeah. 71?
It's funny, same, 71.
I think I was going to go 68, and now I feel like it's ridiculous that I'm lower than y'all, so 71.
All right. I don't have to do the math.
71 across the board.
That's like Get Out, only significantly lower, but still, 71 for the
enjoyable little bit of business.
Yeah. I would love to go back into the modern times when we draw in a little bit. But
that'd be super cool.
Yeah. We have not spent much time in the 21st century this year.
We've had a lot of time in the 1960s, which is definitely the decade, you know, other than like the 20s. It's the decade of modern cinema I've seen by far the least of.
Yeah, so that's good. I'm glad we're doing it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is going to come back to bite us.
It is.
We're going to get another Jumanji, another Transformers, another...
Seriously.
But before we get there, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I feel like Robin and I are absolutely bowling over Camila in this segment recently, so take it as long as you want. Talk about anything.
Well, I can't stop listening to the Vampire Lestat soundtrack, but that's beyond the point. last night we watched Getaway, starring Nick Frost and a bunch of people that I wasn't aware of, but it was like, it's like a comedy horror and it's cute. It's fine. It's like, you know, an hour and 26 minutes. But the problem is that the plot twist I saw coming a mile, like I called like 10, 15 minutes into the fucking movie. And then when we finally get there, it wasn't really like worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, well, you're not really doing much with it now. It's not as fun anymore. So, and it came too soon too. Like it was like 30 minutes and it's like, okay, here's the big thing. And it's like, all right, well.
It can't be too soon and it can't be too late.
Yeah.
When it's too late, you catch up to it. And also sometimes it's like, it happens and you don't have time to react to it.
Right.
When it's too soon, it's like, does this even count as a plot twist or is it just the plot?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Did I talk about Over Your Dead Body last?
No, you did not.
Have you guys seen that yet? Or you know what it is?
I do know what it is, and it's definitely something I'm interested in.
It's
Did you enjoy
great.
It?
Yeah. Okay. It's great. I mean, there is a very uncomfortable like prison rape joke scene.
Oh, dang.
It lasts a little bit too long, and I don't feel like it's really necessary.
It's definitely not.
Yeah, and it's probably
better to go in knowing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, thank you for that warning.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a little like, okay, let's anytime now, let's move on. But once we get past it, it's great. It's so fucking dark and so funny. And Timothy Oliphant. And I love Samira. I'm never going to get that woman's
name. Samira Weaving.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I am.
She's great.
I'm like really a big, I'm starting to become a really big fan of her. She's so good. And even Jason Segel I'm starting to warm up more to him as the years go on. So I would recommend that. And The Last House. Did you watch that?
I started it. I couldn't do it.
Why? Knowing what I told you?
I made it about 10 minutes in, and then I said, I knew what you told me, and so I went to Does the Dog Die, and read all of the trigger things, and there was just
too many.
There were just too many.
A lot of trigger in this movie?
Yeah, and I couldn't do it.
Am I just really that, like... fucking hardened that the only thing that bothered me was the fact that the dog died. And I don't even like, I can't think of any other.
That's why that's the name of the website.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
One that gets the most
that
people.
Is true. Yeah. So Colin finished it though, and he said he thought it was great.
Great.
What do you think?
I've heard both. I'm very eager because I have heard people saying this is one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
It's
and
really?
People saying run out and watch or it's, run to your TV and watch it.
It's not a bad movie. It's definitely not one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I was stressed as fuck throughout like 75% of it. Like I had to stop in the middle and like go take a break.
Take a time.
Yeah. Time but out. I also kind of feel like when we get to the end, it's like, fine.
A lot of horror movies and thrillers have that like... Well, you set it up, but you sure couldn't knock it down.
Right. So it's worth a watch just to see Greta and Wagner.
Yeah, you didn't answer Robin's question in the text thread. How hot is Wagner Moura?
Oh, I missed that. He's pretty hot in the beginning.
Yeah, and I mean, he's not as hot as he was, say, like at the Oscars this year, which is the hottest he's ever been.
Exactly, like he's dad.
Yeah,
like he's in dad mode.
He is 100%
in protective dad mode. But
I am the dad of kind of annoying teenagers. 100%, I am the mom of kind of annoying teenagers.
Yeah,
they are both not at their full hotness.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it gets worse as the time goes
by. Of course.
And also, like, I mean, like, I guess the biggest one of the triggers might be the fact that this is a little too close to coming off of the COVID pandemic. Yeah. Because like being stuck in the house.
Yeah. I'm sure that's why this movie exists, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. But what if it was A Quiet Place? And that's it.
Let me segue off of that to talk about my trip to Netflix House.
What is that?
So I think there's two in Philadelphia in the King of Prussia Mall, which is the one I was at. I believe there's also one in the giant sprawling Dallas Metroplex somewhere. There's a big multi-story Netflix thing that has a big restaurant and a lot of merch and experiences.
Really?
So like a mini theme park.
A mini theme park.
That's
of
fun.
It's like this is to Universal Studios as Netflix is to Universal Pictures historically. And it's all pretty good. It's all consistently pretty good enough. Mm-hmm. That I'm not mad at having spent several hundred dollars and a few hours of my life at the Netflix House, right?
Right on.
The main attraction that we did was Stranger Things Immersive Experience, which is kind of halfway between Haunted House and Immersive Theater, and eventually gives up and is just the beginning of a theme park ride. Okay. Like for several rooms you're like, welcome to Hawkins Labs, we're teaching you, invite into these groups, okay, you go over here, and like it's an in, there are at live actors taking you through these scenes, and you're special and the kids are trying to break you out, and and that's all pretty fun. It does eventually get to like, and now put on your 3D glasses and stare at this screen where 11 will kill Vecna and we ask you to send your power, the whole room is like like, you know, but that's even that's kind of charming. Like that's not like immersive theater, but it's still like enough of it that I'm happy and it's fun.
You're geeking out with a bunch of strangers.
Right. And there's great photo ops. Actually, the best thing was there's like a themed mini golf, but it's like Putt Shack. It's like high-tech mini golf, and each hole is a show. And so it's like, brilliantly, there's a floor is lava hole where like you have to hop around to the stuff, you can't touch the green, and the Squid Game hole is like red light, green light, and if looking, you have to freeze, and when she turns around you have 60 seconds to get the ball. That was really
fun.
Good. And the food was a little bit better than it should have been.
Really?
Like Mary Beth had the Huntrix K-pop Demon Hunters ramen, which was really good. I got the Stranger Things Hellfire Club sandwich. Pretty good.
A lot of thought and effort went into this.
I mean, this is a big cash grab. If you turn your nose up at like paying for themed experiences, obviously not going to be for you.
Right.
If you like any of these properties, it was pretty fun.
That's awesome.
They covered less ground than I thought. There, for all of the stuff on Netflix, 7 properties are meaningful. It's like everything here is Stranger Things, Wednesday, Bridgerton, Squid,
K-pop.
A little bit of Squid Game, and a lot of K-pop Demon Hunters.
No Train Dreams room.
There was no Train Dreams room. I found the one picture of the main.
That was the nap room.
I found one picture of Betty Gilpin from Glow in the corner. But yeah, I kind of recommend it. That was a movie adjacent experience. Actual films I saw include, I didn't like Eli Roth's Ice Cream Man before I heard about all the AI.
I don't hate him.
It's so mean spirited. It's so like everyone hates the kids. The kids hate everybody. The kids hate each other. Like you can just tell that there's a lot of anger in this guy. And sometimes like I thought he really nailed it with Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Like when you're doing like we're doing a down and dirty slasher, like that can be useful. But like this was just icky.
Yeah.
You know, it's all to get to like a crazy middle act where all of the possessed children kill everybody. And so like 2.5 stars for like doing that for the whole time, and then there's just nothing else. And as it turns out, he used AI extensively and then lied about it.
Wow.
And then admitted it but won't say how much.
Oh brother,
he's so gross.
Yeah.
But that reminds me, I've been seeing a lot of movie trailers, it feels like, where it's that same kind of theme where like they're haunted kids shit. Like kids programming. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of like the haunted, like Mr. Rogers or like haunted.
You can't let it go.
Yeah.
It's, we're so, too it's creeped out by kids.
A lot coming up this fall.
So rightfully, that made no money. I think I've seen two things that overlap with Robin, so I'll leave them for last. The other one that I'm so thrilled to talk about is Coyote versus Acme, because it exists.
Yay!
And I've seen it. Thank you. It's so good.
I'm excited. This just now came out? I feel like I've been hearing about it forever.
Because 3 years ago, Warner Brothers tried to kill it for a tax write-off.
Oh, okay.
And then they, when there was an outcry, they were like, sure, we'll sell it, but set such a high asking price that nobody paid it for a long time. It's so good. It is like Looney Tunes, if written by Mel Brooks and presented like Roger Rabbit. Mm. It really, they say we looked into Roger Rabbit to get the look of this, but it's not that horrible, like weird bubbly 3D anime. It looks like Roger Rabbit. It looks like the cartoon characters are walking around in our real world. It's so laugh out loud funny with emotion, and it's smart, and it's John Cena is so good in this. I had to watch twice. John Cena's having an argument with Tweety Bird and is just straight faced. Utah or Utah? What did you tee? It's so good. It makes me mad all over again, because the fact that anyone saw this and thought like, well, we don't need to release this.
That's crazy.
Is sickening, but it's so good, and I hope it makes a whole lot of money.
John Cena is funny.
He really is.
Cena.
One Night Only. Did you watch it? Or
no.
Did we just text about
it?
One Night Only. It's nefarious that they would name it that.
Didn't use that
not have anything to do with Dreamgirls.
It's true. This is an example of a film critic convincing me not to see something, which doesn't happen very often. Yeah. But Mariah Gates on RogerEbert.com gave this 0 stars.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't need this. Nope. Because she also spoils it. And the spoiler made me so mad that I was like, nope, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You don't get my time.
I don't want to spoil it other than to say, like,
it's dumb.
If you're being very generous, they came up with this giant high concept and didn't have one conversation about, like,
what would that mean?
What would that mean? How do we feel? What do we want to say?
That's crazy.
If you're not being generous, they hate sex and think it's okay for the government to dictate whether or not you have it.
And then,
like, that's
the director was like, I actually filmed sex scenes, but I cut them because people don't like sex scenes.
Do you know how desperately I was scanning the screen for a boob just to, like, give me something? Give me something here. And there are none.
Who is people?
Except apparently he filmed them and thinks, no, that pulls audiences out of it. So I assure you, it pulls me more into it.
This is, like,
pulls me right
a out. Thing. This is like a thing that goes around where especially Gen Z allegedly hates sex scenes in movies. I genuinely think it's an op. I think this is like a bot network going out, because they always say the same things. They say it never advances the plot. It pulls me out of the movie. And I think about the actors and I feel uncomfortable for the actors. And it's like, they're fucking actors.
Right. This is their job.
And the same generation, not to cast a wide sound, this is the same generation that will put their whole butts on Instagram all the damn time.
Right.
Like, what?
So.
This is wild to me.
I don't want to cut you off here. Yeah. Please continue to complain about One Night Only, but it got me off of my ass to go see Greg Araki's I Want Your Sex.
No,
I was like, oh, that's a movie that definitely is going to include sex, and it sure does.
I'll just conclude that, like, it's not enough of anything to make you go see it.
Yeah.
It's funny sometimes. I laughed really, if you don't know the premise, the government has outlawed extramarital sex. It's very unclear what's up with gay people. It kind of implies that they find their way around this. But the government has outlawed extramarital sex except for one day a year when everybody goes wild. That's like the purge, but for sex.
Like the most ridiculous plot.
I mean, the funniest thing is actually that, and it is all product placement, but every corporation has clearly branded around the sex day, and so there are
what is sex day called?
What is So like Coca-Cola.
The big night. Oh, the big night.
The big night.
They're all talking about be prepared for the big night. The funniest thing in the movie was literally in the background. They're in a bar and ESPN is on, mm-hmm. and it is just the spinning ESPN logo with a message that says no sporting events are scheduled today. That was the funny. Only time I laughed. Yeah. But there's no chemistry between them. I thought Monica Barbaro was pretty good. Callum Turner is not. Mm. Yeah, it's just not.
I didn't really like him in that last high concept rom-com he did.
Yes.
Eternity.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't need to bother with it. It sounds like Robin picked better.
Yeah. I want your sex. You have to like Greg Araki movies. It's, you know.
I've never seen
them. Oh, well, Sean.
Yeah.
What? Doom Generation?
Yes. Sean, you.
That was a heavy like Gen X moment.
You
like,
got to go home and watch Doom Generation.
Go do your homework.
I feel
Greg
like.
Greg Araki is wow.
I feel like you'll love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely your
it's your vibe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also it's important to the culture.
Yeah.
This movie really is about, like, it's overly reductive to say it's about Gen Z being prudes, but like it is about Gen Z being prudes and this one guy, you know, having a sexual awakening because his boss is raping him. So like
OMG.
Yeah. That makes it sound like it's bad, but it's really pleasant.
Is James Duvall in this?
He is in it for 1 second. And I literally started clapping when he popped up. I was so happy. I was like, I knew he was coming.
I do love the back half of this cast list, which on three separate occasions now I've looked at it and said, what do you mean Johnny Knoxville, Margaret Cho, Charlie XCX, and David Diggs? What are you talking
also,
about?
Johnny Knoxville and Margaret Cho play a completely straight, no jokes.
Oh wow.
Yep. Charlie is good. She can't do an American accent.
Not surprised.
But yeah, Cooper Hoffman is fucking great, and Olivia Wilde is great. The thing about Cooper Hoffman is he doesn't actually look that much like his dad, but he sometimes makes his dad's face, if that makes sense. And that was distracting.
Same with that shockingly young Jack Nicholson
child.
Yeah.
I think he does look like
he looks
his
a
dad.
Little bit like his dad.
I didn't know Dustin Hoffman had a kid.
It's not Dustin Hoffman, it's Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's more sad.
Aww.
Yeah. So yeah. Like you see, you like he'll make a face and you'll be like, oh, I remember when your dad made that face in Magnolia. You know what I mean? Aww. Like the costumes are awesome. I really enjoyed it. And as I was saying before we were on mic, I saw it at 10:45 a.m. on a Wednesday and there were 12 people in the theater. And that feels great.
Listen, this is something this has nothing to do with nothing mostly. But this is the first thing. It's the first time I have interacted with this or encountered this on Google. I Googled the movie, I Want Your Sex, and then I get this safe search with three options of blur, off, and filter.
Mm.
I have never seen this before.
As long as it's giving you the off. As long as it's not like none or a little.
Yeah, blur is checked. I didn't check anything, but wow. Interesting.
Then we definitely both saw
The End of Oak Street.
The End of Oak Street.
And we it's both thought it was pretty good. Yeah. And I think Sean objects more than I do to the overall silliness of the project.
No, I like that I like a lot of the silliness. The let me take a picture of this scene might be the best thing in the movie. I think I just responded to it more when it was not fucking around.
Okay.
Because we get a lot of our movies diminish the violence.
Sure.
A lot of this, look at Marvel movies, like even Jurassic Park movies.
Even like we talked about in The Odyssey, there's not a lot of blood in The Odyssey, right?
This is one
where very violent movie with little blood.
This is one where when the dinosaurs eat you, the dinosaurs eat you. And it's frequently jarring. It's the guy who did It Follows.
Okay.
And the dinosaurs 100% follow.
Yes.
Is the thing. Like the experience of watching It Follows and being like, oh fuck, they're in the background is this movie, but oh fuck, a dinosaur's in the background.
They should have put that giant snake in the trailer.
That giant snake is so upsetting.
That would have been worth another $5 million. I swear. And still, I don't think it was tonally inconsistent. It just, I didn't like aspects of it, but it's a fun movie where everyone runs from dinosaurs in their suburbs. That's just fun and I'm happy watching it.
Yeah.
So and the cast was really good.
Is this horror or
I would
action
say yes.
adventure?
That's a thriller comedy. Slash horror.
Okay. Adventure definitely vibes. You know, it's the family has to survive. okay. together, right?
I, for some reason, I assumed it was like a comedy.
He's definitely no. doing Spielberg. Like, okay. it's definitely got E.T. Close Encounters vibes.
There's a looming divorce. That was when I was like, mm-hmm. ah, divorce and dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. People are going to compare this to Spielberg no matter what he does. Mm-hmm. He leans into that for sure.
Anne Hathaway was really good
in, here's the
in,
thing.
In the year of Anne Hathaway.
I'm loving the half right? a year. And
half a year.
My favorite thing in the whole movie is that when the crisis begins, she immediately starts looting.
Nice.
She waits. She sees her dead neighbor and is like, and I will take this gun and these pills, all right? Thank you for your service, Mrs. Henderson.
Ewan McGregor was good. And what's her name? Maisie Stella?
Maisie Stella, who I spent the entire movie going, who is that? And it was Maisie Stella from My Old Ass. She was good.
It's good. It's definitely a go to the movies.
100%. It's what are we going to see tonight? Go see the end of Oak Street. Enjoy it. Forget it exists in a few years.
If you haven't seen Odyssey or Spider-Man, I guess I would go to those first. Hmm. Just to be up with the culture. And yeah. and I think both of those movies are probably better. Odyssey is definitely better. Spider-Man's a toss-up. But yeah, go see that. Also, super, super briefly, Rose of Nevada.
Which, more high concept Callum Turner.
Yes, Callum Turner and George McKay are fishermen in a hardscrabble Cornish village. And through a series of weird events, the boat they're on goes back to the 90s. And suddenly they're in the 90s. And everyone thinks they're these fishermen that went missing in the 90s. This is a very good movie. I need everyone to know this is a movie where there are more shots of dirty rocks than there are lines of dialogue. Mm. This is a slow burn. Atmospheric, hypnotic kind of a deal. You got to be in on that. This is the guy that made that movie. I didn't see Ennis Men a couple years
ago.
Yeah,
I didn't see that either.
So very moody, very indie. Lots of like that thing where the I think it's all shot on film, and it's got lots of like film doing things moments. But if you're a cinephile who likes that kind of thing, it is really good. Rose of Nevada, George McKay and Callum Turner, he's having a moment right now.
A couple other things I caught up to on streaming. I saw Masters of the Universe, which is on Prime now. Genuinely enjoyed it. Had a great time watching that ridiculous movie.
I heard a couple of my friends were like, I was hating it at first, but then I realized what they were trying to do. And I was like, okay, I realized that it was accepting itself for what it was.
That's a really good way of putting it. It is a very unpretentious movie. And you know, Jared Leto rapes teenagers, but yeah. he does a great job.
Why do we keep putting like just, oh my God.
I saw Mile End Kicks, which is on Netflix. This is an indie movie that came out earlier this year about a music writer in 2011 Montreal. And this is the least scary movie to ever have caused a nightmare for me because the deal is she's supposed to be writing a book and she keeps blowing off her editor and like not meeting her deadlines. And so like every scene I was like, girl, go write your fucking book. Go write your fucking book. And then sure enough, I had one of those, oh no, the big test is tomorrow and I haven't gone to class all semester dreams. And I was like, fuck you, Mile End Kicks. But it's enjoyable and I do actually recommend it. And then I saw Reminders of Him, another Colleen Hoover movie. It was fine. Mm-hmm. And Mortal Kombat 2, which was annoying.
So what would you say about like, how many Colleen Hoover movies have you watched?
Two or three.
Okay. Yeah. I'm really interested in this Verity. This is the first one that I've been like, I kind of want to see this. Do you think it's going to suck? Like, how do these Colleen, how does this work? Cause I hear so many bad things about her writing. Like I bought the book Verity, like, a year ago.
Yeah.
I heard so much bad stuff about her writing that I just gave it away. I got rid of it without reading it.
I've never read it. I don't read. But I think Verity is going to be different than the ones that I've seen because it has like a sharpness to it. Yeah. Whereas the ones I've seen are very like, what if two people fell in love?
Right. Yeah.
What if? Here's my high concept. It
seems vastly different.
Yes. Or two people fall in love and someone has a car crash, the Colleen Hoover model. Yeah. Yes. So I don't know. Verity seems different.
Yeah.
But I am definitely pumped for Verity and closing out the half a year. All right. That's it.
But what did you think of Possession?
You know,
in 1981?
I saw it.
Yeah,
I saw it too late, is the thing. Mm. I've seen too many things that have been riffs on it.
Including Obsession in some ways.
Honestly. Yeah. And like the other thing was that I thought Isabella Gianni was great, but with all due respect to the wonderful Sam Neill, who's recently passed, and the other actor in that film, I'm like, they're just not playing at her level. And they have to do that stuff, too. It's not just her. They all do it.
It has a very stylized acting style that
she
works perfectly
do.
For her, and the rest of them are kind of like doing a thing.
Yes. So
I still love it because I'm me.
Yes. But. I was ultimately let down by it, but it's my fault, not the movies, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Do you want to take credit for scoring a slam dunk on me in text earlier this week?
Sure.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about the Sex Purge movie.
I said about One Night Only. I'm sure the filmmakers would tell you that's not what they're trying to say, but they wrote it ambiguously enough, and that's a problem. And Robin replied immediately with a gif of Nikki in Obsession. And
friendly.
Touche.
Yes. Sean immediately replied touche to his credit instead of getting mad. Good for you, Sean.
There can be different interpretations.
That's
of
right.
Film. Yours is valid.
Yeah. As is yours, sort of.
Well, now I take it back. Let's draw a movie.
Let's do it.
We got nothing. We have no vetoes.
No vetoes on the board.
Nothing special is happening. So we are just, it's chaos until spooky season, which is about to begin
about around
somewhere.
The corner. I know. I'm starting mine September 1st because I want to.
Just because
you get to
you
do what you want.
I know that because I have free will.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We are vetoless. We are specialists until spooky season begins. We are just going and drawing. And today that means we drew Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, brother.
Okay. I, that's funny. I was going to watch that last night to go to sleep.
Oh, God, I'm going to get so fucking grumpy. Fucking Jared Leto. Jesus. I shouldn't have said his name.
You have even evoked the name of Jared Leto.
I keep thinking, like, I would like... I'm not going to do it. I barely have time to watch the movies we have to watch. But, like, part of me wants to run the series on the connected universe, which has Blade Runner, Alien, and Predator.
What's this?
Blade Runner, Alien, and Predator are all series within the same universe.
Oh.
The Blade Runners are the most loosely, like Alien and Predator obviously are part of the same series, right. But Blade Runner is very loosely tied.
Do you know about me that I don't like the movie Blade Runner?
It took a long time for me to like the movie Blade Runner.
Hey, is this the first Ryan Gosling movie we've had?
Oh my God, it might be.
That can't be true. There's no sample size of 200 movies that has no Gosling in it. Maybe.
For
I don't
that,
know.
For
I,
that reason alone, I'm excited.
All right.
I'm excited because I barely remember it.
Yeah. I watched this once because it was nominated for a bunch of Oscars and I was grumpy the whole time. Mm-hmm. Maybe I will have to open my heart and try again.
Are you going to try to watch Blade Runner again?
No, absolutely not. Listen, here's the thing about Blade Runner. I have watched that movie, different versions of that movie, because people keep telling me, oh, the only reason you don't like Blade Runner is you watched the wrong Blade Runner, right? It was like, I watched the original version, and then people were like, you need to watch the director's cut. And then it was like, now there's a new director's cut. And I reached the point of no.
Listen, if anybody tells you anything, any bullshit like that about anything, you're like, no. No, I saw what I saw.
Exactly.
And
you know what?
Informed opinion.
There are other movies in the world.
Also genuinely think the original version is better than the director's cut.
Really?
I've
never seen the original version. I think I've seen the director's cut and the super duper director's cut.
Yeah.
And I saw the super duper director's cut on a projected onto a wall during COVID as like a pop-up drive-in thing. And that was the time when I was like, I get it now. Oh. Which could have been mood, but you know.
I think I did watch the Super Director's Cut. I think that I got so mad because I was like, I keep giving this movie chances and it keeps being just fine.
I mean, it has a weird tone that is virtually indistinguishable from boring.
Yeah.
And I like Blade Runner after that last one, but I'm not a super fan.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons is it has this dark, foreboding tone to every frame of the movie that if you really line up your chakras right... is like, oh, but most of the time it's just like, I'm a little sleepy now.
Yeah. And same thing we were talking about with Possession. You know, by the time I saw Blade Runner, mm-hmm. I had seen so many things that had been influenced by its look that it didn't wow me the way that it wowed people when they first saw it. Like, right. you know, for Not Too Late Tuesday this week, I watched The Rules of the Game. Mm. And part of the reason that movie is so, like, renowned is because it was one of the first movies where the camera is always moving. Oh. And I'm like, you know what? I don't even notice the camera mm-hmm. moving because I don't fucking care because every right. camera moves now.
So, yes, I think this is the first Ryan Gosling movie.
Thank you for checking while I rambled.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it is. I'm not 100%, but I'm excited for that. And two,
come in with your favorite Ryan Gosling. Gosling movies.
Clearly.
And you had a Ryan Gosling show, right?
Yes, I did a whole series where we covered Ryan Gosling on my Down to Watch podcast. We did a bunch of mini series where we covered all of Ryan Gosling's filmography. We're not up to date. I think we're missing like from Barbie on.
Okay.
And yeah, and I'm going to go back and listen to my Blade Runner episode and see what my initial thoughts were. And you can do the same.
Share on our Instagram, please.
Sure. Yeah. Will do.
Half Nelson's really good, right?
Yeah.
I liked Half Nelson.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot when I watched it, and I wondered, like, would that still be good today? But
I think it's just, it's one of those little indie movies. I did a lot with very little. And the
one where he's the Jewish Nazi.
Mm. That one was tough to watch.
I remember really liking that. I don't ever want to watch it again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This has been the pre-episode of Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, so this will be an interesting. As much as I don't want to watch this movie, this is clearly going to be an interesting subject.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Chalk Garden, June 3rd, 1964, it went to number one. What was the number one?
The Beatles.
It was the Beatles.
I want to hold your hand.
No.
Yes, I love you.
No.
8 days a week.
Just keep going. I'll tell you.
She loves you.
I want to hold your hand.
You're all in the right era. I mean, we know this.
Twist and Shout.
It's early. No, no.
Can't buy me love.
Some of those words.
Love me do.
That's it.
Okay.
The Beatles wrapping round.